This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast is sponsored by Brewskits, handcrafted dog treats made from spent beer grains, oats, barley, and rye. No chemical preservatives, a great source of fiber, and packed with protein. Visit brewskits.com to see the full selection of treats for your dog and your cat. Receive 15% off, no minimum purchase, on your first order by typing in lowercase FA2024 at checkout. Cheers! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. He's Christian Ryan. I'm Rich Shane. This is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Christian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Rich. I appreciate it.
Christian, we're going to talk Springbrook Hollow Farm Distillery today out of Fort Ann, New York. Right off the bat, how did that get started?
Well, this was, we've been now, 10 years. It's been a journey. I've been on for the last 3 years, but it started off as most of these things do. It's a hobby. One of the owners loved bourbon, loved whiskey. And one day they're just kind of kicking around like, maybe we should open a winery. Then they looked into the licensing like, yeah, maybe not. But you know what else we love? Bourbon and whiskey. What about we open a distillery? And New York had just come around with farm distilling laws and the farm brewing laws, and it made it so much easier for places to open. They said, you know what? Let's go down that road. And Springbrook Hollow was born. So it is, we've got a couple owners. It's Mike, Dave, Mike's father-in-law, Tony, Mike's friend. It's a real small group. And it's a great ownership group to be a part of. And I've been here for 3 years and it's been fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Talk about your responsibilities at the distillery. What do you do day to day?
Everything never the same day twice, right?
So you're basically the janitorial staff is what you're saying.
Amongst many other things, for sure. You know, I shepherd the yeast along. I boil stuff. I clean stuff up. I boil some more stuff. And then I clean some more stuff. And then I make sure everybody's doing what they need to do, too. So it's great. We've got a real tight crew here. I've got 4 people total. And with all that, we get all that production done. And, you know, this is a second career for me. Actually, a third career, if we want to be technical. I started off in supply chain management, moved over into brewing in 2007, and then distillation for the last 3 years is kind of the final frontier for me.
You kind of glossed over the inception of the distillery, understanding the origin story about maybe a winery, who knows what we can do, laws change. But talk about the beginnings. I know you said you've been on board for about 3 years.
Yes.
Talk to some of the beginnings of the distillery.
Of
I always, understanding the challenges in the beginning or maybe not being there, but understanding that history of how things have come to where we are today.
Yeah, apologies for going quick. I mean, there's just so much to cover. And I know we only have so many time.
We're here for 4 hours. It's okay. The listener loves it. It's a Joe Rogan experience we're going to have, Christian.
Yeah, podcast is a long form medium. So it was, like I said, they've got the 3 owners and they had just thought about a winery. They moved into distilling, and that was kind of Mike's background. He's a chemistry guy, really big into the technical stuff. So they started the small distillation, okay, we'll do some pilots and see how it goes. And he was
really instrumental in doing all the original formulas for example, the Cowboy Coffee that you love. And it was just so much experimentation. And that was kind of what drew them to it. It was the love of, you know what, let's see what happens when we put this with this. You know, let's do 15 iterations of essences to see what we can get out to make a gin. Let's see what we can do with this botanical still. And it's that spirit kind of carried forward. It was just the experimentation, the let's see what we can do. And, you know, we happened to get very lucky in that we've got an absolutely amazing, amazing, very unique water source too, that gives a special character to all of this stuff that, you know, I'm very fortunate to have grandfathered into, but that's one of those unique things that also I think we focus on that a lot of places, you know, might not pay as much attention to because a lot of places take water for granted. Now, so those guys, they were going for, you know, 9 years. It got too big for them to continue their day jobs. So then they started hiring on some more permanent staff to kind of hand over the reins. And that's where I come in.
I think what's fascinating is that we just had Ted from Sono 1420, and he talked about the water or the terroir being on the Long Island Sound, and talking also about the fact that, hey, Kentucky has its limestone and, you know, all those things that get to filter out, and everybody has this provenance, this is our location, this is what makes us special. What is it about that water source that is that fountain of life to this beautiful whiskey?
So I'm sure you've heard people say you can't get good bagels outside of New York City. Oh, why is that? Oh, it's the water. That water for New York City comes from upstate New York. That comes from right by us. So we, you know, we do have absolutely amazing water, and it's the mineral profile, right? So my background in brewing over the last 20 years, I've learned that you can recreate water profiles. It's what we do as brewers. So we want to make a Pilsner, we go for a softer water. We want to make an IPA, ooh, we add some more different mineral contents to adjust our water profile to match Burton on Trent or to do a stout. So that's one of the unique things that I think we're bringing to the table here is that, you know, we've got this great water source. We understand the components and how to steer into it to get some of these unique flavors, to get some of this. The best way to describe it is it gives a fullness and a smoothness to all of our products, right? So when I do samples and we make a bunch, so we got whiskeys, we got liqueurs, we got cordials, we've got vodka, we've got gin. I always have everybody finish with the vodka. And then like, oh, well, why would I do that? I'm like, no, trust me on this one. You follow me here. Vodka should be nothing. Right? Tasteless, odorless. So what are you left with? You're left with that bare, stripped down essence of the spirit and water. And it's, you know, we're adding so much water to all these products that it is the purest expression of that water. So I say, now taste this and you will trace back that smoothness across the entire line of everything you've just tried. And it's, you know, it's the Adirondack. It's that Adirondack spring. It's just 100 yards behind the building. You know, nobody else is getting this except for us. So we're pretty fortunate.
I am so enthused about the method to your madness. There's so much there you shared, and the geek in me about whiskey and spirits is just so fortunate. I feel like I'm having this conversation. No one has ever talked about the differences in water for brewing. And the other thing that you touched upon is, yes, if we go to a distillery and there's gin and there's vodka, clear spirits, maybe they might say, hey, wait till the end on the gin because of the botanicals. But your idea of doing vodka less. Now, I take umbrage on something you said, and this is our mission, that vodka is not tasteless. It's not odorless because we're not living in the 80s anymore. And what I have found, and I would also probably say about your vodka, is it's not tasteless and it's not odorless, but your method is so that you can now, as you say, talk about what that spring and what that tastes like. It does have flavor. It does have character. And that's craft to me. And the method that you taste that to me is inspiring. I love that.
Yeah, I guess the more palatable way to phrase it would be it's a blank canvas. It is neutrality, not necessarily nothingness, right? We're not achieving that Zen perfection of nothingness in that spirit, but it just allows those very fine details not to get lost, and it just boom, everything pops out.
Yeah, I think that's the key. It's fine. You know, that's really important. It's really fine details that you're pulling out of a vodka if you're not just buying a clear base spirit, you know, off the market. Yeah, I mean, I can understand if maybe if it's not yours or you're starting with that neutral base spirit, there's not really too much character if you're not bringing in the grain or from the farm close by. We've had sweet potato vodka. We've had rye vodka. We've had all these different iterations of vodka. And I can say, if I blind tasted those and you said, you know, it's vodka, it doesn't taste like anything, I guarantee you'll start pulling stuff. And you probably know this from your own experiences.
Yeah, neutral does not mean
neutral, right? Yeah. So even there's always going to be some difference in there. But the way I say it, right, we've got two products here today. We've got the straight rye, which I see you sniffing.
I'm just loving, that's part of my experience because I can spend the next 15, 20 minutes. What this does for me, Christian, is it transports me back to your distillery, or at least the old distillery, the old tasting room, because I know you moved. And as you pointed out, you have the owners who have gotten large enough so they can leave their day jobs. You have a distillery that's gotten large enough now that you've moved. So talk about the transition to where you are now and the guest experience as to what people can enjoy.
Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, brewskits, your dog will go wild, brewskits. Beer, grain, dog bones, a healthy alternative for your pup.
Brewskits are all natural and made in the USA. Visit brewskit.com. That's brewskit.com.
Yeah, so we're just 100 yards up the road. We didn't move far. The old barn's still there. We've still got all of our barrels aging up there. We're still doing all the production over there for right now, though the still has changed spots. Hopefully we'll get that fired up in the next week or so. But it's what it's going to let us do is, you remember, it was a real small space, real small. So in the summer, you know, when we hit peak season, I got to shove a bottle out the door to bring an empty bottle back in to fill. Now, this is the new building. We're right on Route 149 in Fort Ann, as you mentioned. But that's going to give us some visibility. So people who were looking for us, I'd see them drive by the old barn, slow down, and then keep going because they weren't sure. Now people will be able to find us. What it's also going to let us do is have more than five people in the tasting room at once, which, you know, we're up by Lake George, big tourist town. It got packed out. And unfortunately, a lot of people had what I would describe as a suboptimal experience. If you were, you know, if it was raining, you're out of luck because there wasn't any outdoor space or indoor space for those people. So now we've got a huge tasting room that's the size of the old building on the one floor. And I've got a production space where I can spin around and not hit something with both fingers at once, which is excellent.
Well, you still have that outdoor space. Does that include that beautiful view that your old space had?
So the view has changed a little bit. Okay. We are now, we're not up on the hill. We're flat, which means I can unload trucks without worrying about tipping them over. But we've got a beautiful outdoor space here too out back. We've got, because it's on the same property. So we're over the woods. You can still see French Mountain out the back. And we also have a patio now too. So we'll be able to have some covered outdoor space.
Our discovery of Springbrook, it was Springbrook Farm or Springbrook just distillery. I think you've gone through even a name change or a name extension since then, haven't you?
Well, the Springbrook Hollow Farm Distillery sometimes is a little cumbersome to say all at once all the time. So we'll go Springbrook Farm Distillery, Springbrook Hollow Farm Distillery, Springbrook Distilling, depending on who's answering the phone and how out of a rush we are at that time.
For Dawn and I, we discovered you as we discover a lot of places just in our travels and either seeing a small sign or finding something on maps or pre-planning to say, we may be near a distillery. Let's kind of build this into our schedule. And this is, we visited you a couple of years ago and it left such a great impression. And as you're talking about the old tasting room, the old distillery, I can visualize that in my mind. And also what you said about your distilling space, it was almost like you made this shack addition to the initial building. What's this going to do now for barrel storage and the production or making more of the darker spirits, the brown spirits that we love?
That is the goal right there, right? To increase production. So based on our old forecasts, like we're going to be falling short if we'd stayed in the other building on high rye production based on sales. And, you know, as you know, in distilling, there's no making up, there's no catching up real quick because it's a 4-year process. So we're just trying to get ahead of that before it would have really cramped our style, where we'd have to start pulling product back or saying, no, sorry, guys, we can't launch in Pennsylvania because we actually don't have enough whiskey for you guys. Oops. So it's a good problem to have where the market demand is going up. You know, we're looking to launch into a couple of new states, Pennsylvania being one of them, should the PLCB decide to comply. But, you know, we're taking off in Maryland, we're taking off in Delaware. You know, New York is great. That's our home state. We're doing a lot of direct sales here, but it's going to let us keep going and bringing this out, you know, which is really all I want. I want everyone who wants to be able to get our product to be able to get it, to try it. Am I going to be Diageo? No. But I wouldn't be upset if we got that big either, right? Because it means we're doing something right that people like.
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is Diageo can't be you either. And it doesn't make it just, it's not about size. It's about quality. It's about what you can bring based on your water. Look, you have farm in the name of your distillery.
Yep.
So talk about what you're farming or where you're bringing in those grains to distill and make your products.
Excellent question. You've done this before, haven't you?
Once or twice. I mean,
part of what our ethos is, right? So we are a farm distillery. Now, we don't obviously grow everything we use on our farm, but everything we try to do is as local and integrated as humanly possible. So for our maple moonshine, our maple guys, like 20 minutes away from here in New York, for the spent grains, they go to a farmer who is, you know, he brings up the trailer, gets our spents. We're actually going to be selling his beef in the tasting room. We're going to be barrel aging some syrup in our bourbon barrels from the maple guy. So I really want to keep everything as tight and as good of a story as possible for how we're reusing and supporting our local community. So all the grain comes from New York, all the corn comes from New York, all the rye comes from New York, all the other products we have in the tasting room as far as like, so our tasting room, we have a full liquor license, so we can do beer, spirits, wine. It's all New York wines. It's all local breweries that we have in here. And it's all about just that integration, telling that story of if you're here, up here in the Adirondacks, what does that look like? What does that taste like? What does that feel like from start to finish? And that's kind of what I'm trying to accomplish with all of this stuff.
Well, to that point, you put Adirondack, we're drinking the Adirondack straight rye. And indeed. I've had conversations with other producers about how what you're tasting is history or what you're consuming is the history of that location, how that business or that distillery or that brewery or whatever has come to be. But never have we had this conversation about your tasting really the flavor of that location to that extent as to how you described it. And that, look, if somebody said blind, you know, it's almost like, yeah, I guess if I want to taste what France may taste like in that area, that's what I'm going to taste. Somebody can say, this is what this tastes like. And I'm gonna say, wow, it's now I have a better understanding. It's almost like describing the color blue to somebody without sight. You're describing to me, the flavor of the Adirondacks in what's in my glass.
So now I heard you on a previous podcast mention that Pennsylvania is the rye state.
Don't take that personally.
Oh no, it's a gauntlet throw down that we are happy to accept that challenge. And you know, all of these spirits, all of these beverages that people make, the origin is what was in that region, right? Pennsylvania grew a lot of rye. They had a lot of rye left over. So that's what they were using to make their spirit. Same thing in New York. You know, it's in the same way New York used to be the hop capital of the United States. And then it kind of shifted overseas out to California. It's what was there. People didn't set out to say, you know, I'm going to make a rye whiskey, so I'm going to grow a ton of rye. It was the other way around. So the region, the area, the territory feeds back in such an important way into both the spirit and the actual output that that I think I want to get across, right? That's what people, I want them to appreciate when they try our stuff and anybody's stuff, really.
It's a competitive fellowship conversation in a way that to say that, look, it's the truth. I mean, Pennsylvania was the rye capital, but there are and still are wonderful rye producing states. You have Maryland, you have New York, as you talked about. But what you said, addressing that, look, Kentucky and Virginia, that was corn-based. It wasn't until those rye producers went south to Kentucky that rye finally found its way. And we're still seeing that today from Kentucky. That's a bourbon. They don't call it the bourbon capital of the world for nothing. And the focus has not been on rye per se until they're starting to see what the trends are in the marketplace. And they're starting to see what states like New York are doing with rye and Maryland and the like. And look, there are places all over that are utilizing rye in their mash bill and making wonderful rye. And I think that's where the fellowship comes in to say, you know what? You make your rye, we're going to make our rye. And we had a wonderful rye from Ed O'Ryan Distillery, and they're down in North Carolina. Just the things that start popping into my head. But this is Adirondack straight rye, and nobody's going to make Adirondack straight rye. And you're getting that rye from a farmer a stone's throw away that is producing that specifically for what you're distilling.
Yeah, and I love it, right? So you can give 10 breweries or 10 distilleries the exact same mash bill to start with, and it's going to be a completely different output. And that's one of the real joys I have of this stuff, right? It's like, oh, you make a rye whiskey, I make a rye whiskey. Let's try our two rye whiskeys side by side and just see what your water, what your grains, what your equipment, what your personnel bring to that, you know, that make it so unique and so different that I will never try to make somebody else's product because you make it, right? So how can I make mine? Even if I love a rye whiskey and I never made one, I would say, I'm going to make my rye whiskey. That's a great idea. But it's going to be unique to us no matter what we do because we're doing it here with our hands and our process. So,
All right. We have the rye to try, but I don't want to. You talked about some of your expressions and you're making liqueurs, the bourbon that you're producing, some of the other expressions. What's the base, the grain base for your neutral grain and how you proceed from there?
Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast.
So for the liqueurs, it's wheat. We go all wheat. I love that wheat. It is very, very smooth. It's got a great flavor. I hope you've got cowboy coffee in that coffee mug.
Actually, for purposes of disclosure, it's tea. But there will be.
I'm a green tea guy myself for most of the day.
I'm doing matcha today and the whole concoction of stuff from different places. Yeah.
So to that local story, right? I'm just going to hop over to the cowboy. We use Crew Coffee. They are down in Saratoga Springs. You know, the guy drives it up in his truck. He does a cold brew concentrate for us that we use just for this. And, you know, they've got two locations on their store, but it's fantastic stuff. So we take that wheat neutral that we start with, vanilla beans, soak it in there to get basically your vanilla extract that we made. And we add their coffee and then just a little bit of sugar because, you know, we want to make it not too black, but coffee. And we get this. And it is, again, something so local that, you know, you're only going to get here. And I hope everybody, you know, I think you liked it when you were up here last time, but it's a unique product again. That, you know, that's what excites me, making stuff that hasn't been made in that way before.
Talk about the progression. We talked a little bit about your vodka. You're making a gin, and just the idea of the botanicals. And I think you also make a seasonal gin, if I recall.
Not yet.
Okay.
So there's so many things, right? There's always so many hours in the day, and there's so many experiments.
Get to work, Christian. Come on. What are you talking to me for?
I'm trying. So right now we've got a couple small side projects that I'm hoping to get up for this winter along those lines of all new spirits, new products that, you know, that I want to get into people's hands that are, as a distiller, it's frustrating in some ways to have to wait 4 years every time. Like I make something, it's like, oh man, is it ready yet? Like I've got a brandy that I made last year and I looked at looked at the barrel. I'm like, oh, we're only 1 year in. This is ridiculous. Can't we just speed things along here? So I'm trying to get some products that don't have to sit, right? So some more direct from still to glass kind of stuff that this winter, I don't want to speak too ahead of myself on it because things can happen between now and then that we're going to be releasing some new products that will be along those lines. So to the point of botanicals, I've got a botanical still. We're playing with some really, really cool local plants up here that we can get some super good flavors out of, right? So it might not end up going into a gin, but it is going to certainly go into one of our bottles here to get us, again, something that we can only get here, something that we only make here as well.
That, for me as a consumer, is exciting because, again, that's the flavor of the region, of the location you have, and how you're playing with that. It reminds me, or it associates a 10th Ward Distillery in Frederick. And they do a lot of stuff with roots and berries and different components that they make special liqueurs out of. And it sounds to me like you have that same mindset. And understand, a lot of things that what we drink today were medicinal. People used to take some of those herbs, roots, and what have you, and it became, let's say, a digestif when you're looking at it tomorrow or something like that. And, that's where you're kind of taking that farm, that old world mentality and creating these wonderful, liqueurs and spirits. And I think, again, as a consumer, I'm blessed for the hard work that everybody there that you're putting in at Springbrook.
Oh, you're too kind. To tie it back to the tasting room, right? So one of the things we're doing along those lines is I've got a great guy who just came on and he's like, how do you feel about making bitters for the bar? I'm like, I love it. He's like, I've got some ideas. I'm like, great. I love ideas. Run forth. Let's do our own bitters. Like, I've wanted to do our own vermouth too. Like, if we're making a cocktail that's Springbrook, how can we incorporate all of those ingredients into that Adirondack experience, right? So that everything you're putting in there is from us, by us, on purpose. So one of the issues I've had when I came over into distillation was, I'm making this spirit. And when it goes into a cocktail, some of those ingredients will just bury it, right? So when I see some of the super sugary, fruity, I understand they're great to drink, but you can't tell what you put in there. So when I have most of these, I do it neat. And I do this when I drink other people's stuff too, to be able to see what is that expression that somebody was looking to put into that bottle before I start putting anything else into it. So when he came to me with the idea of making bitters and vermouth, it's like, that's great, because now we're not hiding it or even covering it with something else. We're pairing it with our flavors, more of our intent. So it's, I could have started my career 20 years ago and still not had enough time to do all the things that I want to do.
I know that those in the whiskey groups are wondering, and we need to answer that question right now. Talk about your bourbon, talk about your mash bill, talk about the barrels, talk about the aging process, let them have it, Christian.
Of course. So we, the one you've got today is the straight rye whiskey. That's 95% rye, 5% barley. We do age everything here. It's such a unique microclimate too, up in this area where, 5 miles from here, it'll be snowing and then we'll be sunny. and it'll be 10 degrees different. So everything gets, you know, we get down below zero in the winter, although this winter has been unseasonably warm, and we get up to the 90s in the summer. So we get a really good swing of temperature and humidity. So the aging comes pretty quick. You know, nothing leaves this building before it's 4 years old, though, no matter what. We've used a couple different coopers over time, and I've settled on Speyside, as you know, wood is also, you know, anyone who's into whiskey and bourbon, they'll know what wood brings to the table, right? It is an extra ingredient that you're adding to your process. But when people come in to the tasting room, they're like, oh, why does what's coming out of the still, why is that clear? I'm like, okay, the barrel is what's bringing that color. The barrel is what's bringing that. It is its own additive ingredient in how, you know, you only have so many minutes to talk to somebody while you're trying to work. And it's like, well, the weather impacts how it interacts with the wood and the time. And, it, you know, you can't rush some of these things. That's why that age makes, you know, longer isn't always better. You can hit age it until there's no liquid left in that barrel. Which we've had, unfortunately, for some weeks, but that's more of a, you know, that's a sad thing. But we've got this straight rye, right? So 4 years, same thing for our high rye bourbon, same thing for the blended bourbon. Now, the blended bourbon is a wheat-based one. Now, we're 22% wheat on that guy. And I'm going to hop over another one real quick, because with bourbons, it's, I also enjoy talking about bourbon specifically, because, you know, it's so prescriptive, but at the same time, it gives you such a wide range of latitude to explore, because you've got to have that corn minimum. But after that, it's open season on whatever you want to put in there. So we do a high rye bourbon, which is 36% rye. And then we've got that wheated bourbon, the blended one, which we bring in some wheated bourbons. We do, you know, blend that with some of our high rye barrels to get that product. So as we were talking earlier about how small that space was and what the limitations were, we do have to source part of that blended bourbon in. Now, this move is going to allow us to bring all that back in-house, which was, it's going to be great for us too. Same thing, bring more of that expression back to what we're producing and growing here. So we've got the two bourbons, the one whiskey. We do a barrel strength variant of that blended bourbon, which is absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And then, you know, we've got the cowboy here and that gin. It's hard to wrap your head around sometimes the breadth of it. But I think that's what makes our place pretty unique too, is that you can walk in and I've got, you know, a couple. He doesn't like bourbons. He only wants the other stuff. He's a gin drinker. She's in a big into the whiskeys. And it's like, hey, everybody come sit down. We've got 12 products up here. We're going to make everybody happy one way or another.
What's the char on your barrels?
Number three.
So not too much of a heavy char, still a little toasting on that, and a good balance for what that's going to do, allow for filtration for that whiskey to move in and out on the barrel.
Indeed, yeah. Balance is a great word to use, right? So none of our products have that sharp edge, that single, I mean, even the straight rye, which is my personal favorite, right? You get so much of that rye, it gives that character of really, really rich caramel, dulce de leche, toffee, but it's not overpowering anything else. It's not like, whoa, where did that come out of for flavor? So that three, that's balanced, right? So that water that brings that balance, and you know, each product is its own, you know, that blended, which is the wheat brings a smoothness to it. It's a very mellow bourbon, whereas the high rye gives that pepper, that spice, and a little bit of that caramel, a little bit more of that toffee. And then the straight rye just kicks it up all the way outside into that sweet, rich toffee caramel note. And we kind of span the gamut there, everything except for smoked.
I have been enjoying our conversation, but while we've been doing that, I've just enjoyed the nose on the straight rye. And the first thing I got when I opened and poured was this root beer note that came out. And as it opens up, as the oxygen comes to it,
There's so much of a sweetness to it. Cherry notes, as you talk about the vanillins, the maples, the toffee that is there. There's also a little bit of a mint note to it, an astringent, a little bit of sourness. And but it comes and goes, almost like a sour cherry versus like, you know, like a maraschino, a sweet cherry. One of the beautiful things about me becoming in touch right now with the Adirondacks is it's not just the flavor. I can smell the Adirondacks here. And I just wish I had an Adirondack chair to sit in.
When it's barrel day, when we're dumping barrels, it's everybody's favorite time. Because you just, you know, you crack that open and it just fills the entire distillery. Just the, you know, you just want to take, you just want to dab behind the ears because it's with you all day long. I mean,
don't give away any of my dating secrets.
The aromatics are just so, so lovely on all of these, the bourbons and the whiskeys. And, you know, this one in particular, right? You kind of nailed it where, oh, it's just so good. Here, let me take a sip because I'm behind you on that one.
No, I'm on my second. It's my second sip to just kind of acclimate. That's why my mouth is watering right now. As it kind of, look, one of the things I love is your reaction. You made this. I mean, you can make this day and day and day, and it kind of gets boring. But what I see is it's a reintroduction every time. I go, oh, I love this. This is delicious. You're almost looking around going, who the hell made this stuff, right?
Well, I'm sure you got a little gray in the beard. So you may remember this, the old Dunkin' Donuts commercials where it'd be the guy who wakes up at 5 time to make the donuts.
Right.
And, you know, I get up at 5 too, and I feel the way it's like, spring out of bed, time to make donuts. Let's go get it here. You know, I still love to be able to sit with this. You know, it's a product that you've made. It's almost like being a chef, right? Like I've made something at the end of my day, I get to sit down and say, have some of this with me. Share what I've spent my time making and tell me what you think. And I can still sit with this every single day, just take a little sip and it's just let that caramel flow over that tongue. And I love it so much.
I'm glad you didn't go, oh my God, did I get the right barrel? Yeah, get the right bottle? What the hell is this?
It's funny, you know, every once in a while, you go to the doctor, like, how many drinks would you say you have a week? I'm like, okay, hold up. This is going to sound bad, but it's for work. It's really.
Work product. I have to do it. It's okay. If you want to connect, and I don't want to belabor the point, but connect with a farm and understand what grain is going to have as far as a flavor profile, I think this nails it because there's so much of that, the bouquet, the floweriness, the graininess, and graininess. I wish there was a better word to describe that.
Yeah.
It plays in, and you've got the barrel, but it's more. I think again that toasting comes in to where you're getting more sweetness out of the barrel than you are more of a char. So you get that oaky profile to what it is. My experience though, and I'm really enjoying, is the fact that this hits the tongue and it's almost as if everything evaporates very quickly to the point when you swallow that you get this warmth in your mouth, in your tongue, in your palate. And it's almost like a fog moving in over a lake. It's just that effervescence that just continues to stay here. And what lingers are those spicy notes, some peppery notes. I just want to sit out again in that Adirondack. Like, let's just, Christian, you and I talk and just drink whiskey and just enjoy this moment of what you're producing. This by far, have you won any awards with this? Talk about some awards. Have you entered this yet? Or are you just kind of giving everybody, you're just giving everybody their space so they don't feel bad?
Oh, I would never say that. It's, you know, awards are tricky because there's so many. There's million, you know, and it's as a small business, we don't have the expense to enter some of these things. It's $600 a pop. It's like, well, I could spend that or I could repair some equipment. You know, in some ways, it's a marketing expense that, you know, I do ultimately want to go in because they give you the same beautiful flowery descriptions that you just gave, right? I'm going to record that. We're going to put it on our marketing material. But we've won for when we've submitted in New York, like for the High Rye, that one's gold in some of the New York State competitions. The vodka's won medals. The limoncello has won medals. But I almost, you know, I put less credence in those than the opinion of somebody who's sitting and drinking who will give me honest feedback. Let's put it that way.
I get as I continue to sip this now that my mouth has become acclimated to different things. The last sip was just walnut. And there's that bitterness component, the skin of the walnut component, the creaminess of the nuttiness of the walnut. And most of the time I find more peanuts or more cashews. Mm. I don't necessarily get walnut. So that was a wonderful little treat there.
You're welcome.
Look, I you know, one of the things I find is, which is really fun, is there's this humility to what you're doing. And you let the spirit, you let your customers and raving fans do the talking. That understood, you're going to work hard, put your head down, because you have to get one bottle out so you can bring one bottle in so you can get another bottle out. But you want those people to be your, hey, they bestow those accolades on you as you know, just making a turn off an exit to find you. That's our experience. I'm curious to, you're on the ground, you're there, you are at the epicenter of where Fort Ann is, mm-hmm. right? What are some of the trends, or what are you seeing from the consumers you have right now?
So part of what makes our locale unique, right? We're in the mountains, but we're right by Lake George. And what that means is there's a huge, huge tourist population. So we have people coming in from all over the country, and we'll see some of the same people that come by once a year. They'll, you know, buy a couple cases like, hey, we're back this year for our trip again. We're going to grab, you know, bottles of this. And it's like, I'm so honored that you guys come back, right? Like that's the ultimate endorsement of what you've done. Where somebody who's coming out of their way, they're coming to a region where there's tons of options and they're picking your stuff again. So what we're seeing up here is, I mean, the coffee is just taking off like a rocket ship. So the Cowboy Coffee, one of our, you know, more popular, one of my favorites as well. You know, this one being the liqueur that you don't need to put anything with. You don't need it in a cocktail. You just need some ice. Same thing with our Apple Moonshine. Like it just needs a little bit, an ice cube, or maybe put something with it if you're feeling crazy. Our sales guy likes to mix the coffee with the Maple Moonshine. And he says it's like breakfast in a bottle. It's syrup. It's the coffee. It's like pancakes. It's fantastic. But that's, you know, it's hard to say new, like there isn't anything new trending through here, right? You know, the world's been around for a long place and a lot of stuff's been established. We're just trying to find the niches where we can be additive to it. Nothing crazy. Like this one here, this is that brandy I was telling you about. We're at 1 year old and I aged it in the straight rye barrels because I wanted we've got a local winery that we got that wine from, again, trying to keep everything as tight as possible, where I'm putting it in the straight rye barrels to get at that caramel component, to get at that richness, to bring that along with that sweetness of that grape. And, you know, that one, again, we're another year out before I can put it into a bottle, but I think that one will do well, and we'll see that style, hopefully, you know, bring some of that back to New York too, because the Finger Lakes are a huge wine producing region. We don't have a lot of brandies up here yet.
See, I think you hit it there when you talk about trends and the idea as craft distilleries continue to mature and come online, and they have developed that following, that customer base, where you no longer have to continue to produce to either pay off your initial investment or produce just to keep things going. You now can expand. You can be comfortable. As you said, we can lay up some brandy barrels. We can do some different things. And I think that's where you're going to start to see that ramping up of New York distilleries that are in that same situation where they're somewhere between 5 and 10 years old, that they can say, all right, we've invested in our infrastructure. We know we're going to be around for a while.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what else we get. Let's take this still out for a spin and see what she can do, you know? And that's exciting for me. And I love the way you did a little bit of shaming there by saying, hey, we have customers that come up once a year and buy cases. I was real happy with knowing I bought a couple bottles. But you're like, Rich, you know what? You're just not, you know, you're small potatoes to what the people that come to visit us. But that's okay. Hey, come back next year. We'll have a brandy, I promise.
You can just come back more frequently and buy smaller increments, and it works out just the same. Hey, that's all right. I mean, you can get our stuff online, too.
We do sell
through the website, which, you know, New York, we can't sell direct. Thank you, random and obscure liquor laws across the United States. So, you know, we do have a logistics provider that handles the shipping. So we do have, you know, we're shipping bottles out. I'll see like a bottle goes out to Missouri. I'm like, I don't know how that happened. Where'd that person find us? And
there's fermented adventure.
Yeah, there's so many cool stuff. I hope so, right? We're going to help each other on this one, but it's
no. And to your point, I've been a customer. We have shopped for Cowboy Coffee. We've given it to friends and family. It is one of those things. While you were talking, I poured. First thing it reminded me of, my grandparents used to own a luncheonette. And one of the things I love when I go into diners, or it's not so much coffee shops, but diners. Mm-hmm. There's this aroma of coffee you get. It's unlike anything else. It's mixing with the eggs and the bacon. And, you know, here we have scrapple and all those things that are in the air. And the first thing on the nose is we're from around Philly, New Jersey. You know, this is diner essence of coffee, if anybody in the area knows what I'm talking about. And that's, look, the nose is, to me, 50% of the experience. Don't discount that to how you're going to enjoy something. And even vodka, you can nose a vodka. It's happened. But this Cowboy Coffee is what you've done with, you know, that collaboration with Crew, and what you've done with your weeded neutral grain spirit and how that plays on that. And that vanilla, you don't need to do anything with this. We have added maple bourbon, as you've talked about. We have added it to an old fashioned. Dawn will make a little martini, a little coffee martini.
The espresso martini, yeah.
Right. But what's nice is you don't need that. This comes almost complete. All we're doing is we're just adding a little bit more of a vodka or a proof component to it to make that little, you know, martini. And this is just, there's also a creaminess to this that gives you that dairy component too. How did everybody stumble upon this? Because this is, to me, one of those eureka moments where, you know, Edison finally, after 10,000 tries, hit the switch and the light bulb comes on.
Yeah, a lot of it is just the trial and error. Same thing with, you know, I do think about that a lot. Like, who was the first person to think to put these two things together? You know, you've got peanut butter and chocolate. You've got, to your point, the mixture of metals that went into a light bulb. The first person to say, you know what, I'm not just going to take this barley. I'm going to see what happens when I mix that barley with the corn and the rye and just, let's see what comes out. And there is a kind of, you know, a fearlessness factor, to your point earlier, of being established enough to be able to take those risks, where if it fails, it's not going to kill you, right? So as a distillery, it helps in that, all right, if that product didn't work out, I can just run it through the sill, strip it out, and turn it into a neutral and see if I can make something better with that again. So we have that fail-safe there. But, you know, there are certain flavor combinations that I pull from cooking. You know, I like to cook. I mess around in the kitchen. But you can learn a lot from just chefs. Like, what are certain things that have just paired incredibly well together? So, like, over the time, vanilla and chocolate have just shown themselves to boost each other, enhance each other. And there's all sorts of flavors that when I go to a restaurant, I'm like, ooh, that's interesting. I wonder what I can do with that combination. Like, you know, if I put it into this, will it come out in the same way? So I'm always, you know, just kind of keeping awareness around and like, I'll file that away for later. I've never thought of using that ingredient, but now that I hear about it and I see what it tastes like, I wonder what I can do.
Well, I wonder too, because, you know, where you are, and I think the trend in the United States is the American single malt. And is that something, now that you have that newer distillery space, is the barley coming local? are you able to give us that Adirondack flavor of a single malt that will be totally different than anything anybody else is producing?
Indeed. Yeah, that's one of the many things we have on the radar. Now, as I was saying before, it's hard to do the four-year ones lightly. So as we're adding new products in, I've got about three whiskeys in the planning queue that, you know, once I get the space up and done, you know, I want to do. So with my last 13 years being in beer, there are so many beer-based recipes that I look at, I'm like, that would be amazing. That would be absolutely amazing to distill and see what comes across and what survives through that distillation process and how that comes out. And then being able to match that, because right, beer gets aged in wood all the time. So there's a lot of natural synergies there from recipes that I want to try. Have you ever had anything, a small shout out to another distiller that I think does excellent work, anything by Arcane Distilling?
Yeah.
The way they bring across, like you have one of their beer-based ones, the hop aromas come through intact, right? So there's so many different spaces to play with that I'm looking forward to bringing on as we get some get some more bandwidth here.
I'm looking behind me because I thought we had a bottle somewhere from Arcane.
There's too many to go through over there.
Actually, we have the Arcane Fernet, which. Yeah, I mean, out of Brooklyn and what they were doing with those beer-based idea of spirits, that's where you come in, Christian. I mean, that's where if people are willing to take risks, and what that does is it enunciates that craft space. It amplifies it to where I had no idea you could do. When you see a woodworker, like, shout out to Scott Wishart of Scott's Mini Woodshop. What this guy can do with a lathe is incredible. What this guy can do with a piece of wood and turn it into something that's a beautiful piece of art. Now, if you invite him over, he'll drink you dry. He'll drink all your whiskey. But what he can do with a piece of wood, it's the same thing for you. What you can do with grain, what you can do with a base ingredient, and then turn it into this beautiful piece of art. And that's what craft is. That is exactly why people like you and the founders of Springbrook, what they bring to, you know, I don't want to make it too much about alcohol and spirits, but what you do to become a fabric of enjoyment of life, you do that. That is so cool.
And I'm so glad to bring it to you as well, right? It's that creative spirit that even if, you know, I'm not an artist, I can't draw a lick. But I can walk into a museum and say, that is amazing. That is beautiful. I love the way the brushstrokes go there, right? So, you know, I'm hoping I can inspire and bring that to people who are like, I don't have a distillery, but I can appreciate the nuance of like, oh, I love the way you tried that and you did that. And you know what? I didn't like that, but you know what? Failure comes with part of that process too, where I'm not going to appeal to everybody, but that's why I got more than one product. So I'm hoping I'm going to hit on at least one of these, on one of these pistols for everybody.
All right. When you talk about inspiring others, who inspires you and who mentors you? Who has gotten and helped you or continues to do so to where you are today?
Oh, wow. It is a unique industry. Anyone who's not in brewing and distilling on the craft side, and even on the bigger side for beer, I can tell you that, come on in. This is the best industry you will ever be in. It is so open, so collaborative that you may think, you know, the consumer may view certain brands as competitors, but I know I can walk up the street. There is a brewery and / distillery, Adirondack. Adirondack Brewing and Distilling, High Peaks Distilling is there at their side. And I'm friends with the owner, John. And I know I can walk over to him and say, John, you know, my delivery didn't come today. Can I borrow some barley? Because I'm short. Yeah.
Matt, have a cup of barley, please.
Yeah. It happens more than you think. And he'd be like, yeah, sure. What do you need? What do you need? Because he knows that I will return that favor. I can walk to another competitor, you know, quote unquote competitor, and be like, I'm having an issue with this. Are you seeing, you know, X? And he'd be like, oh, yeah. here's what I did to fix that. Or here's what I'm seeing. You know, people come to me like, hey, can you give me some advice on fixing this with like my still? Something's not working right. I can't quite figure it out. I'm happy to go over and help them out. It's the answer to that question is everybody. Everybody I interact with at a brewery, at a distillery, at a winery, on this craft scale, we're all family. Like, we really are. I go to the Distiller Guilds meeting for New York, and it's just like the warmest, friendliest get together where we all just talk to each other, and because we're all dealing with the same things. We're all going after people who love this stuff. And we know the best way to do it is by being true to ourselves, which is open, friendly, creative, and helpful.
You talk about your new space, you talk about the patio. Do you have events people can expect to enjoy that cocktail with, things that you're looking to do on the horizon?
Oh, indeed. Our Memorial Day party is coming up quick. That is our biggest one we do of the year. So we'll have a couple bands. We'll have, you know, hopefully a couple hundred people, if not a lot more, depending on zoning. And we do, you know, we're new into using this as an event space too. So we have people coming in. As soon as we open, they're like, hey, can we hold our baby shower here? We're like, sure, why not? You know, you're coming in, you're going to get some cocktails made for you. You're going to have some fun. And it's, you know, we're opening up to the public in a way that we haven't been able to before. So like, we're going to do something for the eclipse, which is rolling through our area next month. It'll be a Monday, so we'll see how it goes. But you know what? We're going to have people out, and we're making a cocktail just for the occasion. So we're going to get to do a lot more exploratory fun stuff on the serving side. You know, when I know I'm going to have a couple hundred people here in a week, I can make some cocktails that would have, you know, I can't afford to do just one of. So we're going to get some real creative stuff going on that side too.
I'll tell you what you just did. You had all the bartenders now scurrying to try to create an eclipse cocktail that they didn't think of doing. You just did that. I'm curious, can you divulge what the eclipse cocktail is?
Of course, they don't have to scurry anywhere. I'll hand it right to them, in fact. So for this occasion, it's going to be the coffee, right? Small world here. It's a shot of coffee, shot of the maple moonshine in Coke. And what that combination does is it's not overly sweet, but it really dives into the Coke and the maple and the coffee all play together to bring out like cocoa notes. It's super chocolate. It's almost like the richest, not even a hot, like a cold hot chocolate. It's so good, so rich, but it's got that blackness too. It's, you know, I'm hoping that one goes over real well for us as well.
Sounds like you're going to need a bigger boat or a bigger distillery. I don't know. Both. People are going to be flocking. It's going to be
by the lake. Come on out. We'll take you on a big boat.
All right. Hendrix is playing, I hear, and Jimmy Page and Zeppelin's going to be showing up. I don't know. You never know who's going to be playing and landed by helicopter over by Springbrook Distillery.
you make that joke, but there's a company like, hey, we're looking at doing helicopter tours where we bring people in, you know, drop them off. Do you think we have enough room to land on your property? I'm like, I don't know. Come on by and find out. That sounds like a lot of fun. You know, coming in, being helicoptered from spot to spot and having some great spirits along the way.
Now I'm trying to figure out where I can get that helicopter, because the only thing keeping us from being there quickly is the distance from you. Christian, this has been a treat. Is there anything we didn't talk about today? Anything you want the listeners to know more about you or Springbrook Hollow Farm Distillery?
Well, I mean, like I said, you can get us on the website. You can get us hopefully in your state coming soon. You know, we're in Vermont, we're in Maryland, we're in Delaware, God willing, PA, we're in New York, New Jersey. And if you can't get us there, get us online. And, you know, we love hearing from the customers too. So if there's something you love, let us know. We crowdsource inspiration as well on that. So we love to hear how people use it. You know, when I heard somebody come in, oh, we use your limoncello to flambe with fish, I'm like, I would not have thought of that. I would have drank it. But, you know, that's so cool that you're finding new in ways that I would never have thought to incorporate this in there.
That's what they do for Dry January, Christian. This way they can say, I'm not drinking. All the alcohol is burned out. It's okay.
That's what the gin is for. Nice and dry for Dry January.
Christian, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. We can't wait to make our way back out to Springbrook Hollow Farm Distillery. It's a lot more to say than it was before. And last time I had been drinking, so I can still say it. So I'm good with that. You know, we appreciate your time today and can't wait to try all the iterations that are floating around in your mind as well as that brandy. So thanks again for your time today.
No, cheers. We appreciate what you do too. The enthusiasm you bring is very much appreciated.
Thank you, sir. Cheers.
Cheers.